welcome to Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader from Flagstaff, Deborah McFadder, with excerpts from Yes Media, a nonprofit, independent publisher of solutions journalism. Through rigorous reporting on the positive ways communities are responding to social problems and insightful commentary that sparks constructive discourse, Yes Media inspires people to build a more just, sustainable, and compassionate world. In the opinions section today, we find this article, Stories Retold in Water and Tallow, by Mia Chalfant, first published November 14, 2024. The article begins with a color photograph. The young artist, whose last name is Chalfant, is in this photograph in front of a piece of art that she has made on the wall of a log cabin. It depicts a buffalo skin. Within the buffalo skin is a red rectangle, and within that is a black and white and gray depiction of a Native woman or Native person. I'm not sure if it's a man or a woman. And the artist is standing in front of this with a big smile on her face. Her hair's pulled up on the top of her head, and she's wearing pale blue overalls like you would wear if you were painting. In the heart of the Wolf Teeth Mountains, on the wall of a log cabin, hung the physical manifestation of a dream, a buffalo hide painted in natural pigments. By combining water and tallow, I blended together multiple generations through a single piece of art, and it reawakened a traditional storytelling technique used by my people, the Northern Cheyenne. After the Dull Knife Battle in November 1876, a society of Cheyenne men sat down and documented their account of the events on a buffalo hide or robe, the traditional medium on which my ancestors told stories and kept records. The buffalo hide is where they memorialized important moments in the tribe's history, as well as their own personal achievements. And they did so by using pigments they created from their environment with ingredients like ash, soils, berries, and plants. The Dull Knife hide was kept in a camp at the foothills of the Bighorn Mountains, but this camp was a major target for the United States cavalry, which was still in search of those tribes involved in the Battle of the Little Bighorn, which had taken place in June 1876 and left the U.S. military sorely defeated. After scouts reported the camp's whereabouts, the cavalry ambushed it. The Cheyennes put up a good fight, but eventually fled deeper into the Bighorn Mountains in freezing conditions. As the cavalry raided the now empty camp, a soldier stole the painted buffalo hide out of a teepee, and thus the beloved hide and the story it told began its journey away from its people. Heartbreakingly, this kind of theft was all too common for us. It was part of the settler colonialist effort to erase us from our homelands and erase us altogether. Oftentimes, when sacred objects were taken from camps, they were locked in private collections with no way to track or find them. Many were never seen again, and the Cheyennes had mourned the loss of this buffalo hide and accepted its fate to be gone forever. But after more than 100 years, this hide was once again seen by the descendants of the people from which it came. On the 146th anniversary of the battle, the unveiling and honoring of this historical object took place at the Brinton Museum in northern Wyoming. Tribal members and the Northern Cheyenne Tribal Historic Preservation Office were invited to view it. Many eyes filled with tears as our traditional honor songs filled the room. The sacred objects that surrounded us, caged in glass, hummed in their display cases. They, too, were excited to be part of the honoring. It's not every day we as Indigenous people get to practice our ceremonies for pieces put into institutions. This was a raw and powerful experience for everyone and everything involved. At this moment, in the presence of it all, I felt the importance of keeping our hide painting tradition alive. I understood the impact this form of storytelling has on my own culture and on those who experience it from near and far. Although this painted retelling of the Dell Knife Battle now hangs in another non-Indigenous collection, it is closer to home than it's ever been, and relatives are able to view it freely. And so, in the winter of 2023, I began my renaissance of buffalo hide paintings, not far from where the Dull Knife robe was painted nearly 150 years ago. Now a color photograph comes up in the story, and it shows mountains in the background with a little bit of snow still on them. They're very craggy and rocky mountains. They don't have a lot of trees on them. And in the foreground of this picture, there is a robe that has been painted, a robe that a medicine woman would wear. And this one is actually a portrait of Pretty Shield, an Apsaloka Crow medicine woman, that's been painted on a buffalo robe. The artist calls it Matriarchs of the Plains, and it's being worn so that we can't see the person wearing it, but we see the robe very clearly. And again, it's that face and that woman that was depicted earlier in colors that make it almost look like a photograph. But behind her, there is a red rectangle, which also has beautiful bright blue flowers painted on it. And all of this covers most of this buffalo robe. As a storyteller and an artist, I have painted with many different media before on canvas, ledger paper, felt cowboy hats, and more. I had never painted on something like a tanned buffalo hide, though. Plastic paints like acrylic simply didn't stick to the surface. Oil paints bled and left dark spots. This required me to use trial and error, as well as asking elders, scouring the internet, and reading historical books to figure out the best way to use modern materials for such a traditional technique. To practice, I started with a vintage elk hide, which I hoped would behave similarly to buffalo, but was much easier to source. Black, white, red, blue, and yellow pigments sat in small, vibrant piles of powder on my palette. While I wasn't able to source everything the way my ancestors had, I gathered materials from far and wide to bring these pieces to life. Slowly, I began to add water and buffalo fat, mixing them with the powders until the consistency was smooth and even. The thinner the paint was, I found, the easier it was to push it across the surface of the hide. And now there's a photograph that shows the outside of the hide, the furry part, and on it are four smaller photographs that have been taken on a fast camera that show the different stages of this painting that is taking place on the skin side. I hung the elk hide from the wall, tacked along the top, and pulled taut by gravity. I sprayed a layer of water and watched as the hide went from a bright off-white to a dark tan. Spraying the hide opens the skin's pores and makes the painting process much easier. After a deep breath to steady my hand, I began with my first paint stroke. The nerves, the worry, and all other thoughts in my head went silent. I could feel my ancestors guiding my hands as I worked the earth pigments into the tanned hide. Almost like being in a trance, I brought paint to hide without feeling the passage of time, and the portrait of a woman appeared in front of me. She was an Arapaho Cheyenne woman warrior who gave me the confidence that the vision I was seeing in my head was achievable in real life. After I finished the elk hide, I was ready to move on to the much larger buffalo hide that was patiently waiting its turn to become a part of my story, the story of a modern Indigenous artist. I already knew who I wanted to paint next. I could see in my mind's eye the contrasts of bright red and electric blue against neutral black and white, and the tan of the unpainted skin of the hide. Now a photograph shows this artist. She's sitting on a little brown stool. She's wearing jeans and a white shirt with baggy long sleeves, and she has started painting on the buffalo hide. The picture of the medicine woman is coming to light. It's done in grays and blacks and whites, neutral colors, and we can see the start of a shawl or something that's around the medicine woman's shoulders. The rest of the buffalo hide has nothing on it yet, but we can see off on the side the logs of the log cabin. I chose to paint an Absaloka Crow medicine woman by the name of Pretty Shield. A strong matriarch revered for her knowledge of medicinal plants, Pretty Shield had influence that reached far beyond her own tribe. I chose to render her in black and white natural pigments, representing a time when reservations were fresh and photographers were documenting the foreign feelings throughout Indian country in black and white. Rising above her is a halo of medicinal plants. I chose to represent this aspect of her work in a contemporary color to show its continued relevance and vitality in modern times. Each aspect of the hide represents a different generation of storytelling and art. The first generation is the hide itself, the traditional material. The second generation is the black and white photography that captured the first accounts of reservation life. The third generation is the contemporary style of bright colors and stylized plants. Now we see a little bit more of this painting as it develops the red behind the medicine woman, and some of the blue flowers have already started to be painted on their bright electric blue. My own love for medicinal plants comes from another matriarchal figure in my life, my mother. Bringing wellness back to the reservation through healers, medicinal plants, and creative outlets, she provided opportunities for people to help themselves, much like Pretty Shield. These two women reflect each other's energy and inspire me to see the medicine women of today. Pretty Shield is the first in a collection of women I plan to pay tribute to with my paint. Each of them has impacted their plains, tribe, communities with their inspiring accomplishments and gifts. I want to honor our shared stories by continuing to push the boundaries of traditional materials and contemporary ideas. I want to uplift the generations surrounding me to live in their medicine, to live out their dreams, and to live how our ancestors dreamed for us. About the author, Mia Chalfant, also known as Heove'e, Yellow Hair Woman, is a storyteller. Through her hide paintings, ledger art, and canvases, she tells the stories that have been told to her. She is also a student, a daughter, and the Kirby cowgirl. Her home is the Northern Cheyenne Reservation, 444,000 acres of shale cliffs, wild horses, and the best choke cherries in Montana. Her roots are strongest at home, but she likes to stray down south where she is pursuing a Bachelor's of Fine Art at the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe, New Mexico. As she grows as an artist and a person, she says she wants to be known by her people as the one who makes marks, the one who paints the hides. You are tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona, listening to excerpts from Yes Media. This is a good time to remind you that if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org. Go to Broadcast Info and Audio, and then go to On Demand. Another article in the opinion section, Rest as Resistance by Yvette Dionne, first published November 12, 2024. A drawing starts this article. It shows a person lying in a bed with a blue cover over them. In one hand is a book that's open, but the person has fallen asleep. And her hair, which is very dark and covers the pillow, has stars in it. In 1835, as legal slavery flourished in the South, abolitionists, who morally opposed the institution and sought to end it, began circulating pamphlets. Abolitionist organizations filled these pamphlets with information and woodcut illustrations about the albatross of slavery and mailed them to random addresses in southern states that enslaved people. Their goal, it seems, was to use material then considered inflammatory to appeal to the conscience of enslavers and encourage them to see those working their land as human beings deserving of freedom. While enslaved people were intentionally kept illiterate, the abolitionist movement still treated these pamphlets and anti-slavery newspapers as signposts, signaling that even amid their suffering, enslaved people were being fought for. Their human condition wasn't being disregarded in favor of profit. Instead, there was a growing movement advocating for their freedom and for their right to lead a self-determined life. In her new book, We Will Rest, The Art of Escape, Tricia Hersey calls upon some of these same abolitionist tools, including pamphlets, hymnals, poetry, and imagery, to convey a similarly urgent message. If we do not take rest seriously and divorce ourselves from capitalism, we will die much sooner than we should. While that might feel alarmist, it's a message Hersey has been conveying for years as the shepherd of the Knapp ministry. The Knapp bishop uses her own life as a model for how we can collectively escape grind culture and embrace rest as a spiritual practice. "I thought I would die," Hersey writes in We Will Rest, an unconventional manifesto and meditation about how she learned to care for herself in a world that doesn't allow us to slow down. "I thought the exhaustion of capitalism would crush me. Rest saved my life." As Hersey often reminds us, rest is a matter of life and death. Rest is essential to our long-term survival as individuals and a collective. Birthing a creative renaissance requires rest that isn't reliant on productivity. Hersey's book calls upon our ancestors, including Harriet Tubman, the Underground Railroad conductor, who helped people escape enslavement, to become escape artists ourselves, to help unchain our imaginations from the bounds of capitalism and embrace new possibilities. Anyone in this culture who believes and feels they are enough right now has begun the escape artist transformation, Hersey writes, to know in the deepest parts of your soul that your birth grants you divinity, rest, care, and power is a seed planted in fertile ground. Much like those abolitionist pamphlets, We Will Rest serves as a guidepost for those who seek rest but are unsure if it's available to them. The book begins with a thought-provoking question. How do you find rest in a capitalist, white supremacist, patriarchal, ableist society? This system teaches us that rest must be earned through work and received with humble gratitude. But Hersey offers an alternative. If we become escape artists or tricksters who defy systems that discourage us from rest, then we can prioritize our needs. For Black people in particular, Hersey accurately argues that rest is our ancestral inheritance and must be protected at all costs. The first step from morphing into an escape artist is belief, she writes. You must believe you have the power to refuse. You must believe you have been gifted with everything necessary. You must be a trickster. No matter what, you must not show fear. We are abundant. Once we believe we're entitled to rest and our ancestors have paved the way for us to claim this birthright, then we must imagine the life we desire for ourselves. Create community, Hersey writes. Be community. Community care can seem impossible when you are exhausted. It is possible. It is only through crafting this community, day by day, moment by moment, and person to person, that change can come. It's not as complicated as we might make it out to be. The world we imagine will come to us through silence, through daydreaming, and through unwavering belief. Every day, morning or night, or whenever you can steal away, find silence, she writes, even if only for a few minutes. We don't need to have it all figured out to begin this personal and collective rest revolution. Capitalism has a chokehold over our lives right now, Hersey writes. The next second, the next minute, the next hour is ours to refuse the grind. We can craft and build temporary spaces of joy and freedom here, now. Like those abolitionist pamphlets, We Will Rest offers encouragement in times of uncertainty, a reminder of our fundamental humanity, and affirms the truth that rest is ours for the taking, and we've already done all we need to do to deserve the freedom it brings. About the author, Yvette Dionne is the executive editor at Yes Media, where she leads Yes Magazine. She is the former editor-in-chief at Bitch Media and an award-winning journalist, pop culture critic, and magazine editor who covers culture and politics through the lens of race, gender, class, and size. Her newest book, Weightless, Making Spaces for My Resilient Body and Soul, was published in December 2022 by Echo. She's also the author of Lifting as We Climb, which was long listed for a National Book Award and won a Coretta Scott King Author Award. Yvette is based in Denver and speaks English. Another article in the opinion section, Ancestors in Focus, written by Shawnee Realbird, first published November 13, 2024. At the beginning of this article is a photograph. It shows a woman wearing a dress that's about down to mid-calf. It's pale blue and has many shells sewn upon it in a circular pattern. Her hands are raised up to the sun. She's wearing a headdress that has feathers and long strings hanging down near her ears. Her face is a beige color, her cheeks are quite red, and her eyes are closed. Behind her is a Cessna 172 that belongs to her, and it's in a hangar, and she is standing out in front of it. As the sun sets over the Collegiate Peaks in central Colorado, John Edward Graybill blacks out the windows of his kitchen, which double as his studio. A single beam of sunlight or even moonlight could threaten the sensitive alchemy that will lure an image from his exposed dry plate glass negative. A clock on the wall counts down the seconds to reveal the moment he captured when he peered out at me from under the black cloth of his 19th century camera. Through the viewfinder, he saw my world upside down and mirrored from reality, a perspective from which his great-grandfather, ethnographer Edward Curtis, had seen my ancestors. The next picture shows what she has just described. The image that will be on the photograph is upside down on this plate that we're looking at. And by plate, I mean a sheet of glass. There's wooden frames around it on all four sides. My name is Shawnee Realbird, and I am Apsaloka Crow. 5 years ago, I held a first edition Edward Curtis portfolio in my hands for the first time. Curtis's life's work revolved around preserving his outsider view of lifestyles that existed before the United States of America did, before we were ever called Indians. He spent the first three decades of the 20th century photographing more than 80 tribes across the continent, including mine. The published result, The North American Indian, is a 20-volume set that captures a pivotal time in Native American history. Curtis recorded my Apsaloka people in 1908 as they began their transition from nomadic freedom on the plains to isolation on reservations. Now there is a photograph of Shawnee Realbird's grandfather, whose name was Henry Realbird, posing with a photo of his ancestor, John Wallace, that was taken by Edward Curtis in the early 1900s. The photo is featured in the 2023 book Unpublished Plains, produced by the Curtis Legacy. In it, the man who is holding the photographs of his ancestors is wearing a brown leather jacket. The sleeves are brown leather. The body of the jacket across his chest looks like some sort of fleece that is imprinted with a design, a Native American design on it. He's wearing a blue and white checked shirt and a red bandana that's loosely tied around his neck. He has long salt and pepper gray hair that goes down his back, and his face is a coppery brown color. He has a very serious expression as he looks out across from the camera. Among the thousands of sepia-toned images Curtis took is one of my great-great-grandfather Richard Wallace, known to our people as Eyes Taken Out, as well as one of his brothers, John. Today, these visual remembrances aid the oral histories of my people. Born in 1998, I am part of a generation of Native Americans who know the stories of life on the plains, but whose upbringing reflect reservation life. For us, the North American Indian has become a sort of Rosetta Stone, helping us connect our ancestral memories with our modern lives. In the spirit of his great-grandfather, whom the Northern Plains people affectionately referred to as Shadow Catcher, Gray Bill and his wife Colleen are working to capture shadows of today's realities. Their Descendants Project aims to amplify the voices of Native peoples whose ancestors were photographed by Curtis. I am one of those descendants. Now we see Shawnee Realbird, but this time she is wearing a blue short-sleeve button-up shirt like you would see on a pilot. She's also wearing a long black tie and a tie clasp holding it to her shirt. Her hair is pulled up in a knot on her head, and she has round black-colored sunglasses on. One elbow is leaning across the front of a small airplane, and she is looking off to the side. 5 generations after Curtis' visit to the Northern Plains tribes, Gray Bill journeyed to the Crow Reservation to capture my story on a dry plate glass negative. I chose to bring him to the Wolf Teeth Mountains, where my mother rode horses with me in her belly, and where I now chase wild horses on foot. It is also the only place I've ever seen my dad, a lifelong Indian cowboy, connect to himself, and only then on the back of a horse. It's a place his ancestral DNA understands better than anywhere else. Among the sagebrush, my father and the horse become one spirit. I began riding horses with my parents when I was 3. It was then that I witnessed my dad's ability to create a connection to our first maker and integrate that spiritual relationship into his modern existence. As a young person, I wondered what I would connect with that could become a portal to the old way of life I longed for. Growing up on the reservation, I heard oral histories from my elders and often questioned where I belonged. Those who existed before me thrived in the harsh mountains of Montana. They survived wars with enemy tribes, followed by genocide and boarding schools, then reservation life, always striving to preserve what makes our Absaloka hearts strong. And that's where we'll stop for today, even though the article isn't finished. We can come back to it next time. You have been tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona, listening to excerpts from Yes Media. From Flagstaff, I am your volunteer reader, Deborah McFadder. Thanks a lot for listening.